The NBA tip-off is just days away, and this is the most comprehensive preview that you're going to find anywhere on the internet, or in iTunes, or in Microsoft Zune, wherever you are listening to this podcast. We welcome you to this CBSSports.com basketball preview. It is time to look around the league and give you who we think is going to end up where. I'm Adam Azer, joined by Greg Urbano, NBA producer for CBSSports.com, and Sergio Gonzalez, our fantasy basketball writer for the website. We are so glad to have you along with us. Let's get right into it, fellas. Season's almost here. What are you guys looking forward to? Greg?
Obviously a lot. I think everyone just likes to see LeBron James play, just to see the things that he can do.
I like him.
I think the favorite thing for me is the block shots. I mean, he does everything else, but the added block shot and the added defense that he's just, you know, really just put into his game in the last couple of years is something that I just love to watch. You know, anytime I see a guy just chase down the fast break and just block the ball off the backboard and give his team the chance to then run their own fast break, to me, that's the best play in basketball.
Sergio, what are you looking forward to?
I'll tell you what. I think I'm looking forward to setting all 15 of my fantasy hoops lineups on Tuesday. That's always a lot of fun each week. I think I'm looking forward to seeing how the Lakers bounce back coming off their championship run a year ago. It's scary to think. I think they've actually gotten better, and that's going to be tough for the rest of the teams in the league.
Well, here's what we're going to do in this podcast. We're going to give you our 8 playoff spots in the East and the West. We're going to go 8-1. We're going to give you a conference final and an NBA final. We're going to follow that up by giving you a sleeper team and a sleeper player in each conference. Then we're going to give you our awards: MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man, and the Most Improved Player. And then, as a little added bonus, since you've been so good for listening to us at that point for like a half hour, we're going to tell you where we think the big-time free agents of 2010 are going to be headed next season. So let's get into it. Who wants to go first with the Eastern Conference?
All right,
Herbs. Hit it.
All right. The number 8 seed, this is, you know, I don't know if it's a homer pick because the Heat should make the playoffs, but I do not expect a good year from them, unfortunately. I think some of the distractions going into the season with Beasley will not help him. Defensively, they definitely are going to lean on Jermaine O'Neal to hopefully get some block shots there in the paint, because outside of him, there's no real big man presence. So hopefully they do, you know, even get higher in the playoffs, but I see them definitely getting in there at the 8 seed. Going up from there, I see Detroit at number 7. I really like the youth they've added. Obviously, they became a team in recent years that was kind of slow.
Yep.
You know, they weren't known for being able to run the ball up the floor. And I think Stuckey, and I think the addition to Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva add to the youth there and add to their ability to run that fast break and to be definitely a different team. This is not going to be that same team we've seen.
Just so you know, when it comes to my turn to speak, I'm going to rip you about your Heat selection all the way at the 8th spot.
That's fine. Now, again, I hope they get higher. I just do not see good things happening there at all, and I think the whole Wade conversation of him leaving is going to be a distraction to not only him but to the team. Going up from there, number 6, Toronto, obviously another team that's going to have to deal with the Bosch situation. But the addition there of Turkoglu is going to add a little bit more to that offense. You know, hopefully he adds a little defense to his game, and they can get up even further in that standings. But above them, at the 5 seed, I see the 76ers. They're obviously a healthy Elton Brand can get them even further up, but for the most part, it's that Andre Iguodala is just going to continue to be that all-around guy who can pretty much do everything. Can't do anything great, but he can do a little bit of everything, and that's a player that I really like every year. Number 4, the Chicago Bulls, again, led by Derrick Rose. You know, when you look at the point guard position, that's so important in this league, and he's one of those guys that, to me, night in and night out, gives that team a chance to win. And then in the fourth quarter, if they're within that, you know, 3-4 point margin, he can get them in there and he can make those clutch shots for a point guard to be able to dribble, penetrate, and do those sorts of things. That's what you need. Number 3, Orlando obviously is going to win their division. This is, you know, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that they're going to be a dominant team as long as Dwight Howard's healthy, and he's just an absolute beast. I don't see him getting hurt.
You like Vince Carter?
I like Vince Carter as an offensive, you know, replacement for Turkoglu. I mean, neither of those guys is a great defensive player, you know, so you have to rely on, obviously, Dwight Howard to stay out of foul trouble, not, you know, take the shot blocking out of the game for them. So if he stays out of foul trouble, on the defensive end, Vince isn't going to be a liability.
Right.
But, of course, he has that shooting from the outside. He's not much of a slasher anymore, but he can still do that from time to time. So, yeah, I don't dislike that taking away Turkoglu and adding Vince.
All right, number 2?
Number 2, the Boston Celtics. I think this is a team, as long as KG is healthy, that's as good as anyone. And if he plays 70 to 82 games, hey, obviously they're going to be up there. And then on top of them, that's going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers, who I think everybody sees as either the favorite or the number two right there behind Boston. Obviously, this is Shaquille O'Neal staying healthy, but even if he doesn't, it's Zydrunas Ilgauskas. If they don't trade him away, that's a very worthy, a very good backup. So I don't see them slipping if that happens. Obviously, it's LeBron staying healthy, but that's going to be the team in the East for me.
Sergio, I wanted to ask you before you get into your picks. Since you are a fantasy guy, you're going to be our injury expert on this podcast.
All right.
Derrick Rose, he's going to be fine. And then also Kevin Garnett, what do you think?
I think Derrick Rose is going to be ready for the first game of the season. I think it's far too important to the Chicago Bulls that he be out there for the first game. I think he'll be fine. I'm advising fantasy owners to start him in all leagues for week one, so I'm definitely not worried about him. Kevin Garnett, he's going to have his bumps. He's going to have his bruises. And I think the Celtics are going to try their best to make sure he's healthy for the playoffs this year. Obviously, we saw how big that was with when they were without him last year. But going into the start of season, I think he's fine. I think he'll be fine this first week. I wouldn't be too worried about that. I do think that the addition of Rasheed Wallace is going to allow them to play it safe with Kevin Garnett over the course of the season.
Right.
So I think that there'll be instances where he won't be playing more than 35, 40 minutes per game, just because they can afford to do that now. So the main goal, obviously, is for them to make a run in the playoffs. They know they're going to be able to get there, even if they play at 80%. They're going to get to the playoffs. So all things considered, I think this could be something we're going to see as a theme with the Celtics, is them kind of babying Kevin Garnett over the course of the season. That said, he'll be fine to start the year.
Yeah, and the Celtics are the clear favorite in the Atlantic Division. All right, Sergio, how about your 8-1?
All right, let's go with I'm going with the Toronto Raptors as the eighth seed. I think they're a team that can be very, very good. They can be very, very bad. They're a very streaky team, and I think that's going to measure up to where they're going to end up around 500 by the end of the season.
That's good enough to get you in the playoffs.
And that's good enough to get you in the playoffs in the East. So they'll end up the eighth seed, I think. I like the Philadelphia 76ers in the seventh seed. I like the new I like the coaching change that they made. I think the Princeton offense is going to work very well with the players that they have there. Coach Eddie Jordan is getting good results already, I think. Philadelphia is going to be, a little bit of a sleeper team this year. I think they'll sneak into the playoffs. At number six, I like your Miami Heat there. I think Dwayne Wade is going to be, that's the story this year. What Michael Beasley offers, I think, is the wild card. Can he get over his own personal demons? Can he start to contribute the way that had most people thinking? He may have been the most talented player in that draft, even more so than Derrick Rose. I think what the Heat get from him this year will go a long way in determining how high or how low they go. I think they're a playoff team either way.
Right.
At number five, I like the Atlanta Hawks. I think they're a team that has all the elements. They haven't figured out their identity yet, but I think they've taken baby steps each of the last two seasons. Remember that series that they challenged the Boston Celtics that year that they won the championship? They're a young team. They have all the parts. I think they're going to be pretty good. At number four, I don't think they're better than the number four team, which is Chicago, which is the team that took another big leap. They're the team that challenged the Celtics last year. I think they're going to be, with Derrick Rose in his second year, I think he's going to be ready to take more control of the game late in situations. He's got to improve his free throw shooting, obviously, which is something that's cost him since his days back at Memphis, as everybody knows. I think he's going to get better over time, and I think this is the first year of a pretty good run for the Chicago Bulls. At number three, I like the Boston Celtics. I think they aren't better than the two teams that I have seated ahead of them, but they're still, even with the aging big three, I think they can, like I mentioned earlier, they can coast their way through parts of the season like they did last year,
right,
and still manage to be a top. They're going to win their division. I think it's pretty evident. At number two, I like the Orlando Magic. I like the moves that they made in the offseason. I think they are going to miss Hedo Turkoglu a little bit. He did a lot of the dirty work in the middle there. But I think with Vince Carter, with Dwight Howard, a healthy Jameer Nelson, I think they have what it takes to even challenge the team that I have as the top seed in the East, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James and Shaq, I just don't see them having too many problems in their division. I think they'll be fine. I think Shaq is at the stage in his career where he knows he has to take that back step, the back seat to a superstar. He's going to do everything that he needs to help him. I think they have a strong front court with Barzal, with Shaq, with Zydrunas Ilgauskas coming off the bench. I think if Delonte West is another player who's got his own personal demons, if he can get past that, if they get contributions out of Anthony Parker, who can play the two, he can play the three. I think they have probably the best supporting cast LeBron's had. And with Mo Williams there, you're talking about a Cleveland team that's better than they were last year, and they weren't very far from getting to the NBA Finals.
And they're just dominant at home.
Absolutely.
They lost one or two home games last year in the regular season.
Right, right.
Yeah, they are absolutely great at home, and that's why I also think they will be number one, but let me give you my 8-1. I like the 76ers. I'm a little worried about their point guard situation without Andre Miller. Is it Lou Williams?
It's Lou Williams, who's a big fantasy sleeper, by the way.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's going to be an everyday point guard for 82 games if he's going to hold up.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I got 76ers at 8. I got the Bulls at 7. But you guys are making good points about the Bulls. I might be underrating them a little bit. They could be in for a big year, depending on Derrick Rose. Atlanta at 6. Detroit 5. Miami 4. Now, I think, honestly, after the three division winners, 4 through 8 is somewhat interchangeable,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I got the Heat at 4, Pistons 5, Hawks 6, Bulls 7, 76ers 8, and then Boston, I'd like to win the Atlantic and be the 3 seed, Orlando in the Southeast to be the 2 seed, and Cleveland number 1. Fellas, who's going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I'm looking at my top 2 seeds making it there. That's Cleveland and Boston. I think Mo Williams, after last year in the playoffs, seeing that he has to be that second scorer, I think this year he's going to actually do that. I think last year he clearly didn't step up to that role, and I think for the most part, he has to do that this year in order for them to win it all. And he probably knows in his mind this is a year with Shaq at center, who might have 2-3 years tops left, that he really has to step up. So I do like Mo Williams to be that number 2 guy, leading, obviously, leading by example with LeBron there. The two of them, considering the backcourt that they're going to have to face in Boston, I think will be able to carry them to victory over Boston and get to the finals. So I'm picking Cleveland over Boston in that Eastern Conference Finals.
I have the same Eastern Conference Finals. I have the Cavs and the Celtics, and yeah, I think the Cavs are going to win the East this year. And it's funny because I've been reading different theories about LeBron. Is it better for LeBron in terms of staying in Cleveland if they win a championship? Does that prove that he can keep on doing it in Cleveland and have a long legacy? Or is it better if they don't win the championship this year, would give him extra motivation to come back? I don't know. We can talk about that later in the podcast. But I think the Cavs do get a little bit better every year. They win the East this year. They go to the finals. And, yeah, the Celtics are going to be a big challenge for them. Sergio, what do you think?
I also have my top 2 seeds going to the conference finals.
Oh, that would be the Magic, though?
That would be the Cleveland Cavaliers against the Orlando Magic,
right,
which means I think Orlando can take Boston in a best of 7. I think that Boston, they're aging. I mean, you start to worry about Ray Allen. You start to worry about Kevin Garnett in particular. Can these players make it through the course of an NBA season and then still have the legs to carry them through a tough series against a younger team like Orlando? I think if I had to choose right now a best of 7 series, I would say Orlando in 6 or 7.
Yeah, so they match up well against the Cavs. That's obvious.
Right, right. So I just think 2 and 3 are interchangeable, just like you guys said. It could easily be Cleveland, Boston. I think it's interesting that we all have Cleveland in getting all the way back. But in my opinion right now, I would have to say Orlando's just a tad bit ahead of Boston.
Guys, what do you make of the Rasheed Wallace signing? Let's talk about the Celtics for a second here, because they are old, and it's somewhat of a stretch to think that all three of the big three are going to be completely healthy come playoff time. But let's be honest, they did very well in the playoffs without Kevin Garnett last year, and they lost Leon Poe, which maybe is a little bit more significant than we think. So they lose Leon Poe, but they gain Rasheed Wallace. Overall, front court depth, your thoughts on the Celtics?
Well, they lose Poe, but that obviously, like you said, with Garnett coming back, you then put Glenn Big Baby Davis back on the bench. So he's a guy coming off the bench that gives them a formidable front. It might not be the best, but it's going to compete every night. That's the one thing about Glenn Davis is he puts it all on the floor every single night. So you're going to get that.
Sure does. And he knocks kids down.
He pushes kids, he does. But the one thing that I really like is, as you mentioned, they are still an older team, but the one thing that I noticed towards the end of last year is that Rajon Rondo is an all-star.
Yeah.
This guy will be an all-star for a long time to come. So you say certainly Ray Allen has taken a few steps down in his game, but if you look at the steps forward that Rajon Rondo has taken, he's a guy that certainly can lead any team. And when you have the other guys around him, he can definitely be an MVP candidate. I do think he will legitimize himself as their best player. Of course, Kevin Garnett's their most important. But I think Rajon Rondo this year will stake his claim as being the best player on that team. And with him playing, you know, at that level and with that speed at the point guard position, he does give them a different element that, you know, they might not have had before. There was times where they didn't trust Rajon Rondo to be that guy. And now they have full trust in him, and he's going to take those reins, I believe.
Unless they hate him as much as all the rumors would indicate.
Nah.
And they try to trade him. Maybe, maybe not. All right, well, anyway, let's move over to the Western Conference, and we'll go 8-1. I'll kick it off. Number 8, I like the Suns making the playoffs. And, of course, remember, with the West, there's a lot of really good teams, and you could have some good teams on the outside looking in. As far as the Suns go, I don't know how much longer their window is to be a great team. I see them sort of taking another step back this year, but still good enough to make the playoffs. I like the Suns at number 8, the Jazz at 7, the Hornets at 6, a very good 6, the Nuggets at 5, the Mavericks 4, Blazers 3rd win the Northwest, Spurs with Richard Jefferson win the Southwest, they're number 2, and the Lakers, I have a feeling we're going to have consensus number 1 seeds, the Lakers winning the West and being the number 1 seed. Go for it, guys.
All right, I have a little bit of a surprise at number 8. I think it's a toss-up between the Phoenix Suns and this team. I went with the Memphis Grizzlies. I think,
really?
Yeah, I think the Phoenix Suns are at the end of their ropes. I think they're not too sure what they want to do.
The Grizzlies!
The Memphis Grizzlies, I think, are going to sneak into the playoffs. One thing we know with the Western Conference every year when you look at the standings towards the end of the season, there's not too far of a difference between the lower seeds.
People are
in it, in the race all the way down to the end. It could be a matter of a game or two that separate these teams. I'm going with Memphis, who I think is going to be a real surprise team this year. At number 7, I like New Orleans. New Orleans is a team that I think a couple years ago we all thought was going to be up there with the Lakers as one of the elite teams in the Western Conference. I think they've taken a couple of steps back the last couple of seasons. Last year was a really disappointing year. I like the addition of Aminka Okafor, but he's already turning some of his relationships with his players sour. There's some rumors coming out of New Orleans that he's been cleared to play in the preseason, but he doesn't want to play because he doesn't feel comfortable. And that some of his, some unnamed sources are saying that he better get out there and play pretty soon,
really?
Because if not, he's going to lose some friends already in that locker room. So you look at a team that has a lot of talent, obviously, with Chris Paul, but obviously there are some issues in terms of their chemistry. They all like Tyson Chandler. That was a purely a financial trade there. So New Orleans is a team that could be anywhere from, I think, 4 to 7. Right now I think their situation is too shaky, so I'm putting them at 7. Another team that's pretty shaky and could we could see them blow up in everybody's faces this year is the Dallas Mavericks. I think a team that has Josh Howard, Dirk Nowitzki, an aging Jason Kidd, it could be either really, really good or really, really bad. And I think when they have a volatile coach, owner, like Mark Cuban, he could blow that thing up at any moment.
You like Marion, though?
I do like Marion. I like this for him personally. I think he needed a team like this, a more up-tempo team than what he had in Miami. He got that a little bit in Toronto last year, but I think this fits him more. Jason Kidd's a lot more like Steve Nash, and I think his best days were obviously in Phoenix. My number 5 seed team is a team I really like, an up-and-coming team. I think they're a better version of the Atlanta Hawks and as far as their Eastern Conference counterpart. That's the Portland Trail Blazers. I think they're a young team with a lot of nice moving parts there. I think this is going to be a big year for Greg Oden to show why he was selected first overall in that NBA draft, coming off that microfracture surgery. He's a year removed from that. I think he'll start to prove that he belongs. Brandon Roy, I think, is going to be one of the best players in the league for years to come.
He's a stud.
And I think he's really arriving. And this could be the first of many, many good years for Portland. The number 4 seed, I like the Utah Jazz. I think Deron Williams is another one of those players he's already arrived, so that's not a surprise. They have some turmoil there in the front court with Carlos Boozer and the whole situation with Paul Millsap. They don't know exactly how that's going to shake out. But I think they have, it's a pretty good problem to have Paul Millsap and Carlos Boozer to try to figure out how to get the minutes. I think a lot of teams would like that situation. The number three seed for me is the Denver Nuggets. I think we saw last year Chauncey Billups does wonders for your team. And I think they fell a little bit short last year, but they're going to be able to follow up on their run from the second half of last year. My number two seed is the San Antonio Spurs. Their window is closing, but it hasn't closed yet. I think we're going to start seeing a San Antonio team that, much like Greg was saying with Rajon Rondo in Boston, I think this is going to become more and more Tony Parker's team. I think they're going to start we saw it last year. Last year was the first year he averaged 20 points scoring over the course of a season. I think they're starting to realize that Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili can't do it all for them anymore. We saw that with the move that they made to get Richard Jefferson and Antonio McDyess in the offseason. So I think they're going to take the pressure off of those two veterans and just become a better overall team. And I think they're going to they have one more really good run in them. I think that'll be the case this year.
All right.
And the number one seed, no surprise there, the Los Angeles Lakers, who I think we've all discussed. They're a good team that just got better.
Okay. And Mr. Urbano?
All right, let's start off with number eight, obviously, the Denver Nuggets. I think this is a team that, unfortunately, is going to have to face the Lakers in the playoffs again. But this is a team that's, you know, they have Chauncey Billups, who is a guy
The Nuggets at eight.
Yeah, I had him at three. I feel bad.
He's a guy that can definitely lead you in the right direction. But when his shot's not falling, that team offensively can struggle. I think, obviously, Carmelo Anthony's amazing. And the things that he did for the Olympic team will just make me think highly of him forever, no matter what he does on the court. I don't care how many Knicks he punches in the face.
Yeah, no.
He's a guy
we all want to punch.
Oh, that could be a good thing.
He's a great player, but the teams above them this year are good teams. And, you know, like I look at number seven with New Orleans. Chris Paul, he's as good as he gets at the point guard position. He's as good as I've ever seen in my life. They're too good of a team with him and David West not to be in the playoffs, so I see them getting to the seventh seed. Number six, I see the Phoenix Suns. You put a pair of goggles on Amari Stoudemire, and he's unstoppable. And at this point in his career, he's ready to lead that team to a championship. Unfortunately, there's not enough around him, but he will get that team, I believe, to at least the sixth seed. At number five, I have the Portland Trail Blazers. Again, another team that if they get certain guys to be healthy for a long time, they can be great. With Brandon Roy, they have a guy who is as good as any other player in the league in the final seconds of the game. That includes Kobe. I don't care. If, you know, obviously, Kobe can hit the longer threes, but when Brandon Roy has the ball in his hands and they're down by two, he's going to hit the shot. He's going to hit a runner. He's going to get to the line. He's going to do something that puts that game in overtime. Number four, I have the Dallas Mavericks. This is a team that I despise. I don't like any component of them, but they fit. They work. Jason Kidd is good enough still to get all the things in the right position for that team. And the addition of Marion does a little bit. I don't love it. I like it. And Josh Howard just needs to be on the court for them to be a top four team. At number three, I see the Utah Jazz. Again, like Sergio was saying, it's never a problem to have two great players. The only people that have a problem with that is the guy who sits the bench. And for them, whether they trade Boozer or not, they are a top three team with Deron Williams, who is as good as anyone. Obviously, him and Chris Paul coming in the league at the same time is amazing, because these are two of the best point guards I've ever watched. So to see them come out in the same class and to be able to watch them for all these years is great.
Poor Raymond Felton.
It's true, but hey, he's got the NCAA ring.
That's true.
At number two, we look at San Antonio. I think everybody had them there. Am I right?
Yep.
Yeah, I did.
That's all a team. Had Spurs, Lakers, yep.
There you go. That's a team that every year is just consistent. You have Greg Popovich, who I believe is either the best or second best coach in the NBA, up there with Phil Jackson. And this team, with Tim Duncan having DeJuan Blair behind him, he will not need to play that many minutes. And I think they're going to be smart, like Sergio was saying, with Kevin Garnett. You do the same thing with Tim Duncan. And he has DeJuan Blair, who's been great in the preseason there. So limit his minutes, keep him healthy, and then let Tony Parker just lead the team. And the way he's been doing it, the ability to get to the paint, the ability to get to the line, he up there with Rajon Rondo, as Sergio was saying, those are the two point guards that just can blow by anybody. At number one, obviously, the L.A. Lakers. And for me, as a Houston Rockets fan, having watched Ron Artest last year and what he did for the Rockets, he nearly single-handedly took down the Lakers in the playoffs. Now, if you remember, that's right when Yao Ming got hurt. T-Mac was already hurt, and they were basically running with Aaron Brooks. They had Carl Landry. They had Chuck Hayes. These are guys who really couldn't make some of the top four teams, But the Rockets, who needed these guys in the backcourt, and they basically brought him off the bench when Yao was hurt and Dikembe went down, and they put up a fight led by Ron Artest. You add him to a team with Kobe Bryant,
all right.
It's deadly.
All right, listen, I get that. And I am a believer in the Lakers. I think they're going to be amazing this year. I might pick them to win the championship. You'll find out in a few minutes. But just to play devil's advocate, was that a smart move? You had a Lakers team that won the NBA Finals. Why not just pony up for Ariza instead of bringing in Artest? You could make the case that he could only make them worse. They couldn't get much better. They're the best team in the league. No. So you think I'm worried that it could blow up in their face.
The only reason I'm not worried about it is because they got the master of Zen there, yeah. Phil Jackson. If anybody can handle this kind of situation, it's him. He's dealt with situations like this in the past. He had Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, but the Kobe Shaq situation didn't end well.
Yeah, well, but they had a
but
pretty
they did
good run
three championships.
for a while. I mean, it may not always be roses, but I think it's gonna work out very well. I think you take the talent when you can get it. They took the talent. They let Phil figure it out. And I think that's going to work out pretty well.
I mean, the only way this could blow up in their face is if Ron Artest goes crazy and punches people in the stands. But he's not that guy anymore. And I don't know if he ever was that guy. I think that was such a bad timing and a bad situation for a guy who's just confused. He's not right mentally. And unfortunately, yeah, I understand what you're about to say. He did what he did. But, again, I don't think he would ever do anything like that again. And I don't think he's a bad person.
I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about Ron Artest just took 25 shots, and Kobe Bryant took 16, and Kobe's pissed because he thinks he should be the
That'll
one.
That'll never happen.
The game.
I watch nearly every game Ron Artest played with the Rockets. The only times he put up a large number of shots were when they relied on him at the end of the shot clock to force up threes more than five times in the game. For the most part, he works in the offense as well as any player out there. He loves to move the ball. Rick Adelman never had a complaint about him, and he would have voiced that had he had any complaints about whether Artest was hogging the ball. And again, this was at a time where he was the only guy on the floor.
Okay.
So he will move the ball, and when it comes down to it, Kobe always, as a defender, would have to face the other team's best player. That's what he did, and that wore him down. Now you have Artest who can do that. So you've got a fresh Kobe for 48 minutes. So as good as Kobe was in the last 4 minutes of the fourth quarter before, he's going to be more fresh and even better now. And those guys who like to take things out and hit Kobe and elbow Kobe and make a hard night on Kobe.
Wasn't that just Artest?
he was the best at it. But every team has a guy that's supposed to be the Kobe stopper, quote unquote. And they try to throw things at Kobe. Now Artest can deflect that. He can be the guy who...
He's the enforcer.
Exactly. He's the tough guy now. And having him out there's going to be nothing but good for the Lakers. They're going to win at least 70 games this year.
Wow.
Well, nobody's going to throw any ice at him, that's for sure. No. All right, so Western Conference Finals predictions, guys. What do you think?
I've got the Lakers beating San Antonio, as I think we all do.
Nope.
Yeah. Oh,
no.
Go ahead.
I don't. You have Spurs
do.
As well?
Yeah.
I like the Blazers. I think they're going to take a big step this year. I think they're a lot more athletic than the Spurs, and I have some concerns about the Spurs, and it's mostly how healthy will they be at the end of the year.
Yes.
If the playoffs started tomorrow, it'd be one thing. But I think by the end of the year, I like the youth of the Blazers. I think they make a big step this year. I don't think they're good enough to win the West. It's one of those – I foresee one of those series where – well, first of all, where did I have them? I had them third. Okay, good. I was making sure I didn't have them where they couldn't play the Lakers. I see one of those series where it's like, yeah, they're obviously a really good team, but they're not quite at the Lakers level yet. And then, you know, they're 1 year away from being – NBA champion or NBA finalist. So, yeah, I like the Lakers. So, we both like we like the Lakers, all of us, right?
All of us like the Lakers.
All right. And we like the Cavs?
We all like the Cavs.
So, who do we like to win the championship?
I guess I'm going first.
Sure.
I'm going
to
go with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Wow.
I think this is their year. I think they got close enough. They smelled it last year. They got a little bit too confident there at the end. I think we saw that. I mean, did any team in the NBA have more fun on the sidelines than the Cleveland Cavaliers last year? That all came to a screeching halt in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they're mad now. I think they were that good. They pretty much sleepwalked through the entire regular season and were still the top seed by far. I think we're going to see a situation where it's a very angry LeBron. And if we saw anything with the situation with the video in the offseason with LeBron James, he's a very competitive guy who likes to maintain a very high image. And I think he's mad. And he's got Shaq now. And he's got everything that he had last year that made him so good. And I think Cleveland is there. I think it would be a really fun series. I think we all wanted to see the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Lakers in the finals last year. I think we see that. And I think LeBron, this is his year to finally win a ring. We know he's going to win one eventually.
I just, no matter who wins the series, I just want to see this. I want to see the Lakers-Cavaliers.
Me too.
More than anything.
Desperately. I was so mad when we were deprived last year.
Absolutely. and especially this year, you have Shaq now on the Cavs, facing Kobe, facing
great.
Phil Jackson.
So many storylines.
So many storylines. And again, you have the two, probably the two best players. I love D-Wade, but the two best players there in the league going against each other. And I think it does come down to, okay, who the next best player is, and who are, you know, 3 through 5, who's got the best players on the floor. And I look at the Lakers team, if you put LeBron and Kobe at 1 and 2, 3 through 6, 3 through 5, pretty much those are all Lakers players. And yeah, that depth with Phil Jackson coaching them, I don't see how they can lose a 7-game series to anyone. I think, again, they win 70 games in the regular season. I think they pretty much sweep through the Western Conference going towards the playoffs, maybe lose 1 or 2 games. But if you remember the years back when Phil Jackson had the Lakers team rolling, steamrolling through the playoffs, they only lost, I believe, the one game to the Allen Iverson 76ers, and I think it was the 0-1 year?
Yes.
You look at that team, I really believe this Lakers team is as good as that team, with even more depth. So there's no reason to think they won't steamroll everybody in the West. And then when it comes to Cleveland, certainly I like the addition of Shaq, but you look at the front court of the Lakers with a healthy Pau Gasol and a healthy Andrew Bynum, there's really nothing Shaq can do, unfortunately, for them.
Well, I guess I'm the tiebreaker then, aren't I? I like the Lakers over the Cavs.
All right.
I like the Lakers for basically the same reasons you said, Greg. Just, that, you know, Odom, Bynum, Gasol. I'm a little worried about their perimeter scoring. Derek Fisher hit some big shots for them, but he's getting older. Do they have another outside shooter? You know, Trevor Ariza used to sit in the corner and bury three-pointers, and it was just worked perfectly in that offense. Is Ron Artest going to be able to do that? They might need to shore up the outside shooting at some point. But, of course, remember, when we preview teams before the season, it's not how they're necessarily going to look at the end of the season. So I like the Lakers to beat the Cavs. I think it could be an amazing series, a classic, and it really would be just what basketball needs, so hopefully we get to that point. We got to give out our awards, but there are a couple things first. First, we need sleeper teams in each conference and sleeper players. But I also forgot to give you a hard time about the Heat, Greg.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because you had them number 8. They're the same exact team as they were last year. Where's the drop-off?
Yeah, well, the drop-off is basically going to be, again, with the concentration of the team, with Dwayne Wade's, you know, question of whether he's going to be there next year. So you look at how they match up against the other teams in the East. Do they have the ability to hit threes? Not particularly. There's no real sharpshooter on this team. Do they have anything
James
in the paint?
Jones, potentially. If he's healthy,
potentially. And if you look inside the paint, do they have a good paint game? Well, not really.
No.
They have something if Jermaine O'Neal's healthy. And I love Udonis Haslem because he hustles night in and night out, but he's a guy that's played over his actual talent level for years now just because of effort. And hopefully he can continue to do that, but I don't see it happening. And again, with Michael Beasley, don't count on him having a good year. I think, unfortunately for the Heat, they missed out. They missed out. They could have, if they were horrible 1 year later, they could have had Blake Griffin. Because when coming out of college, if you looked at Beasley, he was almost like Blake Griffin. He was a very tough guy, and you thought he was going to be heavy on the rebounds and a shot blocker perhaps, even though he didn't have the height, at least you thought he might put the effort into it. I don't see that from him. I don't see any sort of effort on the defensive end aside from moving his feet.
It's a much different offense. It's a much different offense than what mm-hmm. he was doing at Kansas State. I mean, they are a slow, half-court, stagnant team, and maybe they can open it up. I think Chalmers was better than we expected, but they're going to have to get creative to get Beasley involved. And I don't know what position he's playing, small forward or power forward, but I wanted you to weigh in on that, Sergio. And he's Urbano's very down on him. What do you think?
If you remember when I was given my predictions for the Eastern Conference, I think I said that Michael Beasley's the wild card. I think it depends on what Michael Beasley shows up this year. Is it the player we've seen the first year and changed, the one who got in trouble in the rookie symposium, mm-hmm. the one who got in trouble again in this offseason and had to go to counseling? Or is it a more mature player who maybe with some of the veterans there, maybe Dwayne Wade even, can get in his face and just tell him, hey, you're this talented, you are this good, you're here for a reason, let's just shut up and play basketball. If that happens, which I think can happen, I mean, Pat Riley's still around that building, and he knows how to mentor young basketball players, I believe. So I think if for whatever reason, whichever way, they can get him to wake up and just play basketball, they could be a very good team. Now, with that said, he is the wild card. If, for whatever reason, he is just not that good, then you're talking about some real struggles for your Miami Heat there.
See, I wonder, having covered the Heat just a little bit and been in that locker room, I do wonder if Wade will do something like that. I don't know if he really cares enough to go to Michael Beasley and say, you need to step it up. He might do it, but I don't know that he cares enough, knowing that in all circumstances, it's likely that he's not here next year. It's likely that he's not with the Miami Heat.
I don't know about that either.
Again, we'll get to that later, but will he put it all into saying to Beasley, okay, you're going to be my number two, or is he just going to play out the season? So and that's a good question, because it could happen. It could definitely go the way Sergio said, and he can sit him down and be the mentor and be the leader. So let's see it. I hope he does. Let's see the first weeks of the season, how they come out. And again, I don't think they'll do that well, but they certainly can get up to a 5 seed in the East. There's no doubt about it, but we'll see. I'm not setting the bar high.
All right, well, Dwayne Wade is one of the number one competitors that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And as you know, you talked about what Brandon Roy does if your team's down by two or three. Mm-hmm. As my friend, who's a big Heat fan, once said to me, he said, Dwayne Wade, if the Heat are down by two and don't have the ball, he steals the inbounds pass and hits a game-winning three.
He does.
We saw that last year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's just an absolute
on the run.
Player.
And the other thing is, he's a guy that, for the most part, for the first three quarters of the game, can't shoot the three-pointer. Then all of a sudden, when they need it at the end of the game,
yeah,
the guy's an amazing three-point shooter. So you are right. I mean, he's one of the best I've ever seen, and I hope they get high.
You ready for my inciting violence statement of the day?
Let's hear it.
People always get fired up about this one. Dwayne Wade is the second best player in the NBA behind LeBron James.
There's no argument in this room, I don't think.
No.
You think he's better than Kobe?
Because
people go crazy when I hate on Kobe.
Well, it depends on what you're saying. As a singular player, Dwayne Wade is better because he right now is more athletic and in a stage of his career where he can just do more things. Now, Kobe in his prime, he could probably go out and block 100 shots the way Wade did last year, the first guy ever at 6'4 to do that. But right now, I don't think Kobe has to be put out that much. He doesn't have to have the gas to the floor every game. Dwayne Wade does. And when you see a guy play that way, yes, he looks better. And I think to say he is better than Kobe is not horrible statement.
Some smart
but
people in the room.
Kobe is still he's still that guy you want on your team if you have to win a big game.
I disagree. I think he is a selfish player. I think if you look at what he's done on Olympic teams and what he did, and look, I know that he got all the credit for winning in the Olympics.
That was Dwayne Wade. Almost
Kobe was extremely selfish in that game, missed a lot of big shots, and got lucky that some of them went in. What he did against the Pistons in the last NBA Finals before, what I'm blanking on what year that was, mid-2000s, the last NBA Finals, didn't pass the ball to Shaq, was so selfish, kind of single-handedly lost them that series. That's why I think Kobe's ego sometimes gets in the way of his abilities, whereas Dwayne Wade is a much less selfish player, and to me that's why I have him number two behind LeBron.
No real argument.
Yeah. All right, thank you, guys. Thank you. All right, sleepers in the East. My sleeper player is Thaddeus Young of the 76ers. I think he might be ready to take a step. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star, but I think he'll be just below that level. And I like the Pacers. I think if the Pacers stay healthy, they got a shot to make the playoffs. With Dunleavy and Granger, they are going to be able to shoot lights out. It might be one of the best outside shooting teams in the East. So that's my two cents.
All right, I like that.
Thank you.
In the East, I like, as my sleeper team, I like the Charlotte Bobcats. I think that Larry Brown, I mean, he makes a lot of bad teams really, really good. Really,
without
really quickly.
Bell, though?
Without Bell, I think DJ Augustin is really strong. I think we're going to get a chance to see that now because of the Bell injury. I think they were already, last year, a very good defensive team. Their problem was that they were one of the worst scoring teams in the league. I think they will have a chance to work on that this year. If they get any kind of offense, I think they averaged 93 points per game last year. If they get even up to where they're averaging 95 to 97 points per game with the kind of defense that they play under Larry Brown, I think they can be a surprise team. My surprise player in the East, I think, is Ty Thomas. We've talked about him, especially in fantasy circles, as a breakout player every year. Pretty much he's been in the league, and every year he's disappointed. I think he's just – sometimes you get a player that it takes a while for things to click. He obviously is very talented. That's why he was selected. I believe he was fourth overall in that draft. He was traded for LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
We've seen how good LaMarcus Aldridge has been for Portland. For Chicago, Ty Thomas has been good, but in spurts. I think towards the second half of last season, we finally saw the player that Ty Thomas can be long term. If he can carry that over to this season, he's a player that can block 2 to 3 shots per game. He can rebound. He can score. I think he's young enough that he can still take that step. He's my pick for sleeper player out of the Eastern Conference.
Sleeper player in the East, I'm going to go with Rodney Stuckey, point guard for the Detroit Pistons. He's the guy who I think has to be the kind of reinventor of this team, make them establish a new identity through Stuckey. And obviously replacing Chauncey Billups, he has a completely different game than Chauncey Billups. So this is going to be a team that kind of relies on him to be able to dribble penetrate, open things up for the guys that are outside, with the other shooters, but he can also score. So I definitely like him, and that's why I like Detroit to be a playoff team this year and to maybe get up there towards a 6 or 5 seed. For the sleeper team in the East, as horrible as it sounds, I actually think the New York Knicks will do something a little more impressive.
You're
little more
wrong.
Impressive than we think.
You're just
I think
wrong about
the
that.
Bar is set so low for this team.
It should be lower.
And you know, obviously they don't have the talent. I think if you're
they're your best awful.
Player, if your best player is David Lee, you're not going to win a championship, but they are at least going to play hard, and I think D'Antoni's style, and just as good of a coach as he is, he will get more wins out of that team, and they'll not get to the playoffs, but they will definitely be one of those teams that's fighting for the playoffs and can be a team that, again, we will call a surprise simply because of the fact that no one thinks they're going to do anything.
The only time they played well last year was a brief stretch when Danilo Gallinari was healthy and contributing. He's had a terrible preseason. I don't necessarily put too much stock in that. If his back holds up and he can play, you know, 70 games, then, yeah, they might be able to approach 38 wins or something like that, which, hey, might get you
in the East, that might work.
But I think they're going to be terrible. All right, moving to the Western Conference. Greg, your sleepers.
Sleeper there. Earlier I was thinking a guy like Emeka Okafor, you know, this is someone who can either make or break that team this year. And he can make them by being consistent every night. Get those 14 to 15 boards. Try to be able to at least be a guy who will take the pass from Chris Paul and put it up with authority. And I think he can do that. I think he could at least be the consistent guy. Even though Chandler added the dimension of the alley-oop, he added the dimension of, you know, really being able to run the floor. I do think this team does have to kind of adjust their offense a little bit, but when you have Chris Paul and David West there, it's not going to be hard for him to fit in. So I do like Emeka Okafor, and I really love Rudy Gay this year to be – I mean, I don't think he's a sleeper. Everybody knows his name, but playing in Memphis, people don't see him enough. And if you watch him play, the guy's as good as they get athletically. If he can add even more of a jump shot to his game, he's up there with, you know, the top 10 to 15 players in the league as far as talent. My sleeper team out West – it's my Houston Rockets, just because I don't think anyone's going to. It's a little bit of a homer pick, but they're not a team anyone sees doing anything. The one thing I'll say is that Rick Adelman is such an amazing coach. He's somebody that gets the most out of every player he's ever coached. If it weren't for Phil Jackson, the guy would be not only wearing and sporting a couple of rings, but he would be definitely given a lot more respect in, you know, the top coaches when people have that conversation. So I think Houston's going to do a little better. I think Trevor Ariza is going to have a nice year. Aaron Brooks is a good point guard, even though, of course, his height doesn't allow him to do much on the other side. I think running that offense in a completely different offense without Yao Ming, they're going to be a little bit surprised, and they're going to play hard every night. That's the main thing.
Right. You know what? I'll go ahead.
Go ahead.
I like Jeff Green as a sleeper player. I think he's got obvious talent, and he moves really well for somebody his size, but he has to be able to do it consistently and really cut down on the turnovers. And if he can do that, then, you know, his team might be a sleeper team. But my sleeper team is the Clippers.
Wow.
They stay healthy, and you're talking Baron Davis, Marcus Camby, Chris Kaman, Blake Griffin. They need a little bit of help at the shooting guard, but they've got talent on that team. I see them finishing in third place in their division.
I think the first three guys you mentioned will probably miss about 30 games each. That's unfortunate. And Baron Davis, he's as good as it gets when he's healthy. So certainly, I would think that's a sleeper team if they do stay healthy.
And they're not bad at shooting. Eric Gordon's not a bad
player. That's true. You know, I forgot about him. I don't know if they have a lot of depth there, but yeah. Right. Eric Gordon was damn good last year. And then you got Al Thornton. You got DeAndre Jordan. It's a young team, and it's talented. And I know it's stupid to say the number one pick in the draft is probably going to be the rookie of the year, but he is.
he's so much
better, it seems, than the other guys in the draft, and I think he's going to be a beast. I think the Clippers are a sleeper.
All right. I like it. I think My surprise team out west is the Memphis Grizzlies. I think he alluded.
Yeah, we needed to talk about that.
The Memphis Grizzlies. Greg alluded to how good, or was it Greg or was it you? Somebody alluded to how good Rudy Gay can be. I think if you look at the lineup that they could put out there right now, it's not bad at all. Talk about Mike Conley at the point. Talk about O.J. Mayo at shooting guard. Talk about Rudy Gay. You talk about Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, and that's a pretty strong 1-5. Allen Iverson, once he gets back, is going to be coming off the bench. Can that situation work? We don't know, but I mean, they have scorers. They have players that can potentially put up some defensive stops when they need to. And I think that could be a team that surprises a lot of people this year. The problem, I think, will be if Allen Iverson becomes a distraction and if they can figure out a way to get all their – because they have so many scorers – to keep everybody happy, especially a guy like Zach Randolph.
Yeah.
O.J. Mayo, they don't want to stunt his development. I think he's a future scoring title competitor, like year in, year out. I don't think they want to stunt his growth, so I think they're going to want to keep to ensure that he's getting 15 to 20 shots per game. But can you do that when you also have to feed the ball to Zach Randolph? You have Allen Iverson, you have Rudy Gay. Can they do that? I think Mike Conley is going to be very important there to make sure he has to be the link between all those players to keep everybody happy. If he does, I think we're talking about a team that could surprise a lot of people. My surprise player out west, I think, is Jason Thompson of the Sacramento Kings. I think he's going to be a big sophomore player out there for a Kings team that's not going to be very good, but I think he's going to put up some numbers and turn some heads. Oftentimes, we see that the biggest statistical boost a player sees is from their first to their second year. Jason Thompson averaged, I believe, 11-7 last year, but towards the end of the season, he was more like 15-10. And I actually got a chance to talk to him this offseason very briefly. I asked him what his goals were for fantasy purposes, obviously, what kind of numbers he wanted to put up. He told me very bluntly 15-10. So I think he's going to be – if he puts up 15-10, I think he's going to be a real surprise.
That's pretty good.
That's flying under the radar right now.
Guys, let's talk about our awards for – the league, we can talk about the MVP, and I think, you know, we all are going to say LeBron here, so let's do a top two. I like LeBron, and you know what? Every single year, the same cast of characters could win this. I'd like to see Chris Paul get a little bit of recognition. He's going to be number two on my preseason ballot.
Like you said, LeBron will win this award. He'll win it for at least the next 6 to 7 years. Besides him, in the Eastern Conference, I think Rajon Rondo is going to be that guy that's up there in that conversation. In voting, because of the way San Antonio is going to play this year, I believe Tony Parker will be number two in voting.
Wow.
Just because of what he's going to do for that team night in and night out. I think they're going to realize, okay, he's now the best player. Yes, Tim Duncan's great. Tony Parker, this is his team, and he's going to lead them to, you know, obviously the Lakers, like I said, they're going to win 70, but San Antonio's going to be up there. They're going to win a lot of games, and I do believe Tony Parker will be up there in the voting. Now, Kobe won't be in the voting simply because that team is so talented. He'll probably be 3 or 4, but I would put Tony Parker number two.
My number two is Dwight Howard, the Orlando Magic, obviously. He is, I think, one of the best defensive players in the league. He's getting better every year offensively. He's taking that next step. He's shown that he can carry a team on his back, and I think he did that last year. He'll do that again this year. He is the next great big man of the NBA, and I think if LeBron James is the best player in the league, the league always has a face. There's a little man and a big man, and right now I think the big man is Superman. That's Dwight Howard, who I think is going to be up there. He might steal a lot of LeBron James' first place MVP votes, I think.
Well, you know, the media is always looking to get someone else involved. They're always looking for the storyline. They don't want to get predictable. But, yeah, obviously LeBron is going to go into this year as the best player and probably come out that way as well. Which brings us to our defensive player of the year, and that's another easy one. You'd think it's going to be Dwight Howard.
Yeah, we would assume he's going to lead the league in blocks, not just by a small margin, but, again, by a huge margin. And, you know, this is a guy who just takes the paint and owns it each night, and I think LeBron James is going to be, again, second in voting just because he, like I said, as far as covering the entire floor. When there's a fast break, any team playing in Cleveland, they better look behind them because LeBron's coming up to block the shot, and he's definitely established himself as a better defender right now than the other superstars, even though Kobe's a great defender and Wade's a great defender. LeBron is as good as it gets defensively also, which is what we always said about Jordan, so now he's finally done that too.
I think
you're a defensive player.
I think we all agree that Dwight Howard's probably the favorite. If I had to pick a dark horse in this race, I think it's Ron Artest out in L.A. If he becomes that player that Greg was talking about earlier, if he's that enforcer, if he does all the dirty work, and I think Artest, what we're going to see this year is he's going to push aside some of his offensive game and just do a lot of the dirty work. He's going to play that Dennis Rodman role, I think, more than people expect. He's going to be diving on the ball for loose anything on the ground is his. He's going to be fighting for rebounds. He's going to be among the league leaders in steals. I think if he can just become that defensive element for the Lakers, he'll be a dark horse in the
series. When you allow somebody that talented to really focus in on one side of the ball, I mean, it really does that. And it's the same thing, like we said, reverse for Kobe on offense. He can really focus in on just killing a team. And Ron Artest can just focus in on being that guy, being the aggressor, kind of making the other team switch their game plan and approach them in a different way.
Moving on to Coach of the Year. Going to go with Mike Dunleavy, coach of the Clippers, because like I said, I expect them to be a lot better this year. Greg?
Given a lot of awards to the San Antonio Spurs, it seems, and I'm going to go with Popovich getting this award again. I mean, he's a guy that could have gotten this award 10 times. He's got it once, and I do think, you know, this year the Western Conference is pretty known who's going to be at number one, but when San Antonio outpaces everyone else and really shows they're the strong number two, I think Popovich will be the guy people realize, okay, he's really put it together every year. Let's give him this award again. Second in that is a guy, again, that I see coaching for Houston is the guy Rick Adelman is someone who can make anything happen with five guys. It doesn't matter how good they are. If you give him a point guard or you give him the five positional players, he can teach them some sort of a game plan to attack. Unfortunately, the team's not good enough, so Popovich will win that.
Yeah, you know they're going to score like 80 points a game, right?
Well, the thing is, no, they can increase the pace when you have someone like Aaron Brooks, so they can play at a breakneck pace. And if you look at how Golden State played in recent years, it's horrible. It's a horrible way to play to put up 110, 120. Yeah. But defensively, because they don't have any big men, the other team's going to score so quickly that Houston has no choice but to, you know, speed up the pace and score upwards of 95 to 100. If they do what you said and score
near 80.
Well,
I'm just saying, they don't have a score.
They really don't, but they have a system and they can get open shots. And I think, again, just being as good of a coach as he is, he can get something out of nothing.
I took a similar approach as you guys. I went with the coach of one of my sleeper teams, going with Larry Brown. I think if he can make the Charlotte Hornets competitive this year, for him to win this award, they'd have to make the playoffs. I think it's possible. I think they could be a seventh or eighth seed in the East. We've made fun of the Eastern Conference for years now. You don't have to even be .500 to make the playoffs out there. And if that happens, if they take that next step, I think Larry Brown will be awarded for his work there.
You know, I'm going to change my pick. I'm going to go with Isaiah Thomas at FIU.
Nice.
I think he's going to have a big year. Finally get the recognition he deserves. And Magic Johnson will present him with the award.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Sixth man of the year. Now, I was thinking about this, and I asked somebody in our office. I was talking to Eric Kay. I said, who do you think is going to be the sixth man of the year? And, of course, he's like, well, yeah, I was laying awake at night last night thinking about that. And I'm going to have to go, and he's a Wizards fan, with Randy Foy. I'm like, you know what? That's actually a pretty good pick. So I'm going to take Randy Foy.
All right. That works for me. I'm going to go with a guy who's actually won this award before. He won as a rookie. That's Ben Gordon out in Detroit. I think he's had success in this role in the past. The last couple of years in Chicago, he'd gone away from that a little bit. In Detroit, he's going to have to play off the bench because they have Rip Hamilton there. And he's a player that can score 20 points per game off the bench. And if he does that this year, I think he'll win.
And we know what happens when you threaten Rip Hamilton's starting job, don't we, Allen Iverson? Greg?
Another guy that's always in the six-man conversation, and that's Manu Ginobili, who could start, probably should start, but I think, you know, Greg Popovich realizes we don't need the guys to start that are the great players. We need the guys to finish that are the great players. So even though he doesn't start, he's on the floor when you need him to be on the floor, and he gets enough minutes to be as productive as most starters. So I think seeing him go healthy is obviously the main thing for him to get this award. And I think this year, again, with a little more depth on that team, they're not going to have to play their guys to the point of exhaustion at any position, I don't think. So I do think he can stay healthy and win that award this year.
Okay, and finally, the most improved player of the year will be, I'm going to go with Greg Oden. I feel like maybe that's a little bit of a cop-out. But, yeah, I think he's in for a big year. Greg Oden's my pick.
I'll go with Trevor Ariza. This is a pick that basically he has to improve because coming off the bench last year, or even when he got a few starts, he was never the main focus of the team. This year, he's going to be the focus of the team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. As you said, Houston has really nothing aside from him as far as scoring. I mean, you look at Shane Battier, great NBA player. This is not a guy who's ever been able to score. So I do think Trevor Reeves is going to step it up, and especially for the first half of the year without Tracy McGrady, he's going to put up some numbers that will make people at least, you know, look at him for this award.
I'm going to go with a young big man. I'm going to go with Roy Hibbert from Indiana. I think he's a guy he's caught my eye in the preseason. He's had some really strong performances. They don't have much of a presence in the front court. I think Jeff Foster is on his last legs. He's going to establish himself as their center of the future. And I think if he could have, he could be a player that averages 15 and 9 by the end of the year. And I think that would be enough to win him this award, considering he didn't do anything last year.
Yeah, well, he's a big dude, so they got a lot of size there and a lot of potential, that's for sure. Fellas, thank you very much for previewing this season. Now,
thank you.
The season, of course, is going to be dictated by cap space and teams trying to free up enough space to be in the running for the big-time free agents in the summer of 2010. The Knicks, the Nets, the Heat, these are three of the teams that have, you know, some of the most cap space and flexibility right now. Who's going to be unloading the expiring contracts? It's all going to unfold in front of our eyes in the next few months before the trade deadline. So we're going to give our predictions now of where we think these guys are going. Let's start with the king of the crop, LeBron James. Sergio, where will LeBron James be next year?
Drumroll, the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think it would be a national tragedy if he leaves Cleveland. I think they'd have to close the city down. They have nothing else to look
forward to. You got the
Browns. Yeah, right. That's good. The Indians too, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
I think he just can't do that to the city. I would hate to see that. What does trouble me is we've seen his lack of affiliation for the city. He's a Yankees fan. He's a Cowboys fan. He could care less about the city of Cleveland.
He's a LeBron fan.
But I think he has to have people around him that tell him that this is the best move for him. He could be the king of the Midwest. He could be the king of that whole area. I would hate to see it any other way. I just don't think he'll leave Cleveland.
He's leaving. He's going to be a New York Knick. That is my prediction. Now, let's be clear about something here. With the salary cap going down, it's not clear right now, and maybe you know, Sergio or Greg, I don't think any team is going to be able to sign two max free agents unless they keep unloading contracts. But as it is, I think if there's going to be two superstars going to one team, someone or both is probably going to have to take a pay cut.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not 100% on that. So I don't see two guys going to one. And there was a lot of talk about these guys want to play together. I think they want money more so than that. So I don't know if I see that. I think each superstar is going to have his own home, and I think LeBron is going to be a New York Knick. I just feel like if he were going to be a Cav, just come out and say it already.
Yeah.
Just throw your support behind Cleveland.
Well, in a way, yeah, he should do that for the fans, but he can't do that from a standpoint of being a player, and your agent would never say to you,
why?
Do that.
You're going to get the max contract anyway.
It's all leverage. It is complete leverage.
What leverage? It's not like baseball where they can offer him $30 million a year. There's a cap. You can only offer him a certain amount, and the Cavs can pay him more than anyone else because he's their own guy, and the Cavs are going to pay him as much as possible. There is no leverage here. If he wants to be a Cav, just say the words. He could tear three ACLs, which is impossible,
yeah,
and he'd still get a max contract from the Cavs. Just put your support behind him, and he hasn't done that.
Well, the interesting question we brought up earlier is, if they win the championship, does he stay? If they lose the championship, does he stay?
Not
now,
even worth speculating.
I think if they lose the championship, he can use that and say, this is why I think I need to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
If they win the championship,
yes,
he can also say, well, I did
my
what I wanted to
do.
Exactly. So either way, he'll spin it, I believe, to get out. I don't think he wants to stay in Cleveland. And obviously, he loves the place he was born, and he loves that state. And he says he's never said anything bad about it, and he's not. But he's also, like Adam said, he's not really said, this is my city, and I'm going to be here for life. So if you look at how he's reacted in interviews, and if you look at the way this goes for most superstars, they don't usually end up with that team, unfortunately, that's in a small market that drafted him. He's going to take that next step. I believe it's going to be with New Jersey or Brooklyn at the time. Only looking at them unloading Vince Carter to make that space, and then, of course, you bring in a Russian billionaire owner who flies his soccer team around on million-dollar jets. This is a guy who is alluring. Obviously, Jay-Z is a part owner there, too. I wrote an article a while ago that said, I think, and this was last year, that he will end up in New Jersey / Brooklyn, however they do that. This was before the billionaire owner came in to kind of secure that arena. And now that's going to happen, or at least it looks like it's going to happen, I don't think there's any doubt he'll be on the Brooklyn Nets. Or the Brooklyn,
dude,
if they decide.
The Nets.
They could be.
They're the Nets.
If they rename the team to the Brooklyn LeBrons when they move to Brooklyn, then, of course, he has to sign. And that, hey, why not? From a marketing standpoint, why not?
They're the Nets. They have a terrible fan base. They pale in comparison to the Knicks. Full disclosure, I'm a Knicks fan. But I'm not. I'm being 100% honest here. There is no comparison to the two franchises.
If you move them to Brooklyn and put LeBron James and anyone else on the team, they're going to be. There's going to be a lot of Knicks fans who say, "Oh, wait a minute, I don't really like the Knicks as much as I used to. Now I'm a LeBron / Brooklyn."
You know, the Mets can never ever be the number one team in New York, no matter.
No.
They have
what,
been, but they were in the 80s.
There's no LeBron in Major League Baseball.
I've seen studies where actually people's favorite team has always been the Yankees, and all it takes is the Yankees were awful when the Mets were good.
Yes,
all it takes is the Yankees to, or the Knicks to be relevant, and the Nets. You know, if the Nets are great,
right.
If the Knicks are this bad now, and the Nets have LeBron, the Nets might get more of the attention if they move to Brooklyn. If the Knicks are good in the playoff hunt, they're still going to own that city.
I completely agree.
With LeBron playing the same city, you're out of
mind.
First of all,
the Knicks are not going to go away empty-handed. So even if they don't get LeBron, their whole life has been waiting for July of 2010. They're going to get somebody.
They better bring in Amare. If you bring in Chris Bosh, that'll just be something, but not enough. It would need to be definitely a Wade or an Amare plus something else. But I don't agree. I think if LeBron goes to Brooklyn, all of a sudden that's the biggest place. Wherever he goes, especially if it's he's in Cleveland it's already
not,
made the Cavs that
but
big.
He wants to leave Cleveland, perhaps. He's not going to be in that. All right, last factor here with the Knicks. Every player loves Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah.
He was on the Olympic squad. It's a big recruiting chip that they have.
Adam, full disclosure, I am a Nets fan.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know
and
that.
And with that said, I think you're absolutely right. We have a horrible fan base. The Knicks own New Jersey, and there are very few actual New Jersey fans.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's sad. You see a game there, although, you know, they're trying to play games in
Newark.
York.
Yeah, which I think is great.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I think the playing games out in the Izod Center, it's out in the middle of the swamp. It's actually not close. It's close to New York, but Newark is actually an urban area where there's actually things going on where people are not going out of the way to go to the game. If you're going to the Meadowlands, you're going out of your way to go to the game. Whether you're coming from New York, whether you're coming from any part of New Jersey, you're going out of your way. I think in Newark, they could actually revive, or not actually revive, because there's nothing to revive. They could actually build a fan base from people from actually parts of New Jersey. But we'll see what happens.
I'm still not clear about this. Are they definitely going to be in Brooklyn?
No, I don't think it's definite. There's a lot of hurdles to clear. Ratner bought the team because he bought the team so that he can get that land and that development in Brooklyn. Now he figured out a way to get that without the team. I don't know if he's so I don't think he's as involved in moving the team over as he once was. Now we're hearing these rumors out of the organization that they want to play in Newark for the time being. If that ever turns into something, then that whole Brooklyn thing, I could see that getting scrapped. Really could.
That would be a tough break. All right, where's Dwayne Wade going to end up, Greg?
Unfortunately, I love Dwayne Wade. I'd love for him to be here in South Florida forever. When the Michael Beasley news broke that day, I basically said he's going to Chicago. I think he's wanted to play for Chicago. He's wanted to basically be a Bull, I would think, his entire life. And it's unfortunate for the Heat that he won a ring already, because I do feel like he's going to say, well, I won my ring here, and I can move on. And if you look at, again, the Beasley situation and the other things that are on that team as far as not having any real depth at a big man position, you can't add that much depth in 1 year. Even if they do sign one person, it's not going to be, I think, enough to entice him to stay. I think Chicago has that ability to say, okay, you come in here with a young Derrick Rose, we keep some of these young big men, you're going to run this city. And I think that's, unfortunately for Miami fans, that's what he wants.
I think Dwayne Wade, we see this down here in Miami. He likes the South Beach lifestyle, I think. He enjoys being a big deal down here. He's kind of a big fish in a little pond in terms of the sporting the Dolphins don't really have a big star player right now. The soon-to-be Miami Marlins sure don't have a big star. I think he likes the idea of being the king of South Beach, and I think he's played that up pretty well.
Yeah.
When he's been here, he had businesses and restaurants that he was trying to develop. That fell through. He's put some footprints into the area. I do think in some ways it's weird because he's not from here and LeBron James is from Cleveland. He's shown more loyalty to South Florida, even being from Chicago, than LeBron James has shown to Cleveland. So I think there are some factors personal that could keep him here. I do think, Greg was saying, that Michael Beasley is going to be key. If he sees that there is a chance that this team can rebuild itself and be something, that'll help. But when it comes right down to it, money talks, we'll see where the money comes from this offseason.
Yeah, I think the Heat will keep him. I think Dwayne Wade will stay. I'm sorry, did you give a prediction?
I guess I didn't. if I had to guess right now, I'd say he'd stay.
Yeah, I think he's going to stay, and Chicago is actually a really, really good pick for Wade. That would make a lot of sense. But he does seem to really love being in South Florida. And honestly, there's no state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
There's no there's no horrible winters like in Chicago. This is a tough place to leave. I've met a lot of people who have come down here from up north or the Midwest or whatever. They do not ever want to leave South Florida. It is a great lifestyle. He will be the number two athlete in the history of South Florida sports behind Dan Marino when it's all said and done. And I really hope he stays because they love him down here in D-Wade County.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's try to fly through it a little bit. Chris Bosh. I got him going to the Mavs. He's a Texas boy. I can't see him staying in Canada, unfortunately. I think he'll be gone. I think he might be gone before the end of the season. Your thoughts, guys, Greg?
Yeah, I think Mark Cuban's not going to let Chris Bosh go anywhere else. He's got the money and he's got the ability to say, hey, look, we're going to do something different down here, and I think he'll convince Chris Bosh to head down there to Dallas.
Yeah, I think all signs point to him going to Dallas. I mean, I've already heard of rumors where they trade Dirk Nowitzki to kind of cut in line and get Chris Bosh, but I mean, obviously those are rumors, but I think all signs point to Chris Bosh going to Dallas, which of course means he'll go somewhere else.
So where do we think Dirk Nowitzki is going to be?
I don't know. I think this year is going to be a tipping point in that relationship. I mean, he's got to show that he can be a tough-as-nails player that can carry his team. That's been the knock on him in the past. He's been labeled as a little bit of a soft player. This is the year where they reach the breaking point. If they're good, I think he stays. If they're not good, maybe we do see him get traded in the middle of the season.
I think they have to realize that he's not the guy that single-handedly can win it. I think Dwayne Wade showed that to him in those finals. They were the better team, but Dwayne Wade was the best player. And he clearly just took over that finals and said, no, Miami's going to win this, and I'm going to prove to Dirk that I'm the best player on the floor, and he did that. And unfortunately for Dirk, he's not a guy that can really pound it out and be the aggressor and show the other team, you need to fear me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't fear a guy whose best play is a turnaround jumper. That, yes, you fear his shot, but you don't physically and mentally fear that guy. When Kobe walks onto the floor, the other guys on that court, they shake. They realize, okay, this guy can do stuff at any given moment that's going to win this game. I don't think Dirk's that guy, and I do think Dallas parts with him. I don't see any specific destination for him, but I don't really see him staying in Dallas.
I see him staying in Dallas. I think Cuban will keep him. And I think Cuban is gearing up for right now. I think this past offseason was evidence of that. Re-signing kid. And how many years does Kid have left in him? How many years does Marion have left in him? Your window is closing. So I think he's going to make an aggressive play to win the championship in the next 2 or 3 years, even if it hurts them in the future. And I think Dirk is going to be an important part of that.
Can we agree that trading Jason Kidd for Devin Harris was just absolutely horrible? Because Devin Harris is one of the bright spots at the point guard position. I mean, to say that one of the bright spots, there are many great young point guards, and he's one of them, mm-hmm. who can score, who can dish, and really can do anything you want at that position.
I'm a Nets fan, so I thought that was awesome. So I think it worked out very well for us.
The Nets are on the right track. They're making the right moves. And there'll be players, and I think they will end up with Amari Stoudemire. I don't have really a basis for this. I just feel like I see LeBron going to the Knicks. I see Wade staying with the Heat. I see Bosch going to the Mavs. Where is Amari going to go? Somebody's got a lot of cap space. It's the New Jersey Nets. I think he'll end up there.
I think the reason we have a lot of cap space is because we're coming off an ownership that really didn't want to invest any money into the product in terms of the actual team. It'll be interesting to see with the new ownership. He's a billionaire. He's got lots of money to spend. Does he want to put it back into the product? I think maybe he could. And Amari Stoudemire would be a good fit there. I think Amari Stoudemire and Brook Lopez in the future, two young players, couple that in with a great point guard of Devert Harris, and you got something there.
I'm going to change mine around a little bit. Based on the movement here, Miami's going to have to grab one of these guys. And as you guys are saying, Miami's a very enticing spot. Amari could be that guy. If Wade leaves, I do think they have to get one of those big-name guys. Pat Riley is too influential not to pull one of them in. So I think Amari then, with Wade leaving, will come down here in Miami and give them a big man and at least allow them to kind of focus on maybe an easier position to fill, which will be kind of finding that backcourt guy. Because right now there's just no way for them to get a big man in a hurry.
All right, finally, guys. Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Yao Ming, Manu Ginobili, Joe Johnson. I'm sure we're forgetting a lot of free agents. It's an incredible class, whatever. But these five guys, again, Pierce, Allen, Yao, Ginobili, Joe Johnson, any of them moving on to different teams?
I can see Joe Johnson going somewhere. I think he's more of a mercenary, more so than those other guys who I think have some loyalty to their franchise, especially in a situation like Yao Ming. I think he owes it to the Houston Rockets to come back there and try to salvage something out of all that they've invested in him. I think Joe Johnson has that type of scoring ability that's going to entice a lot of teams to offer him a lot of money. I think he might be one of those players. He's just off that top tier that once that starts to shake out and people are left without one of those big players, they're going to maybe reach a little bit and go after Joe Johnson. And he could be he's a player that he can put the ball in the basket. He can lead your team in scoring. And I think he'd be a good find for just about any team in the NBA if they can get their hands on him.
I could see something like Joe Johnson ended up in Houston with Yao Ming once Tracy McGrady comes off the books. Yao Ming, I definitely see him staying in Houston because neither side wants to admit defeat in that. I don't think Houston wants to say the Yao Ming trial is now over and it didn't work. And I don't think Yao wants to say that he couldn't get it done in Houston. I think he's going to end up signing with them. I think out of that list, probably Ray Allen's the one guy who it's up to him. If he wants to take that reduced money to stay in Boston to get some wins, he can do that. Or if he still wants to get some more change, he can go somewhere else. But, you know, I really don't think either him or Paul Pierce wants to break up that trio they have there. And when you have a coach who really, to them, is almost like a friend, for them to keep that core together, I don't see it getting dismantled for any reason.
I can't see Paul Pierce in another jersey. I can't see Ginobili, and I can't see Yao Ming on other teams. Ray Allen and Joe Johnson would seem to be the two of that group that have the best chance of changing addresses next season. All right, that's going to do it for the 2009-2010 NBA Preview Podcast for CBSSports.com. Greg, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Adam.
And Sergio, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back all throughout the season. We're going to start it out once a week, and then we'll see how it develops. But we're going to keep you posted on everything that goes on in the NBA. And Sergio, your fantasy basketball podcast, once a week with Jamie?
They're actually twice a week. We try to do one on Monday and then another one on Thursday. We're also doing a lot of video this year. Keep an eye out for that. Check out fantasynews.cbsports.com for all the latest for your fantasy teams.
And if you want that podcast, you can get it on the website or you can subscribe in iTunes or in Microsoft Zune. It is called the Fantasy Pick and Roll. For Greg Urbano and Sergio Gonzalez, I'm Adam Azer for CBSSports.com. Enjoy the NBA. Hoops is back, everybody. Woo!